sure Brother Carl's no stranger to any of us. We've very much benefited from his ministry in the past, and we anticipate yet another blessing this afternoon. Brother Carl has selected for the title of his remarks, When Will Babylon Collapse? When Will Babylon Collapse? Brother Carl.
Well, brethren, as our title suggests, the inquiry of today is going to be of a prophetic nature. And any time we deal with prophecy, we want to, of course, realize that we are probing a subject. We particularly enjoy the format that this convention provides for such probing, because it gives an opportunity for questions and answers to follow, to further delve into the parts of the subject that maybe we didn't clarify as much as we should. I would like to clarify, of course, at the beginning that in the nature of any prophetic probing, we are dealing with events that, by their very nature, are not that clear to us. We all see it through a glass darkly, and therefore it's in the area of dialogue that we approach the topic. We're going to try to take a very limited probe today. We're going to try to limit it to the exact question of our title. When will Babylon collapse? I think the answer is extremely easy for all of us. In the great Armageddon crash that fully ends the present dispensation and fully introduces the new dispensation. But we want to be a little more specific in our answer, and we're going to state our conclusion to begin with. So as we go through our lines of evidence, you'll know exactly what we're trying to conclude and where we're going. And our conclusion is that Babylon collapses in the fullest sense of the word during that which is commonly known as Jacob's trouble, when God fights for Israel as he fought in the days of old. Now, stating the conclusion, we'd like to go now and pick up the evidence to support the conclusion. Generally, when we talk about the fall of Babylon, the most common picture we use is the picture of the seven last plagues of Revelation. And we like to go to that and read the last two of those plagues. Revelation 16, verses 12 to 21, to set the stage. And the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they are the spirits of devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth and of the whole world. And the next phrase we want to emphasize, to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked and they see his shame. And he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. And the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air. There came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne, saying, It is done. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings. And there was a great earthquake such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts. And the cities of the nations fell. And great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was very great. I'd like to notice that in the plague sequence, the effect of the sixth plague was to gather the nations. The effect of the seventh plague was to break apart and destroy the gathered host. The sixth was a plague of gathering. The seventh was a plague of destruction. Now, before we get into the comparisons that we want to make between the events of the sixth and seventh plague and that of Jacob's trouble, we want to clarify what is not our issue in talking. We realize that the term Jacob's trouble is used differently by different brethren, and that's not our purpose, to identify the precise meaning of that term. That's a good discussion in itself and worthy of much discussion. For the purpose of our talk today, to clarify what we're discussing, when we use the term Jacob's trouble, we're referring to the battle, the last battle of Israel, described in Ezekiel 38 and 39 in detail, picked up also in the third chapter of Joel, the 14th chapter of Zechariah, and Isaiah chapter 66, verses 15 to 20. And those four scriptures we'll reference continuously during our study. First, we'd like to pick up the gathering from the sixth plague. You notice this is our first line of reasoning. When does the gathering of all nations take place? In Revelation, it takes place in connection with the sixth plague, which is the next to last step in the final collapse of Babylon. But in the Old Testament, we find the picture in connection with a different series of events. We find it in Joel, the third chapter, the first three verses. Behold, in those days and in that time, I will bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem. I will also gather all nations. Same phrase. I will gather all nations and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will plead with them there for my people, for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. They have cast lots for my people, have given a boy for an harlot, and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. The gathering in Joel is against Jerusalem. The gathering in Joel is for the purpose of pleading for his people Israel. Zechariah 14, verse 2, speaking of the same gathering, says, "And it should come, and I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, the houses rifled, women ravished, and half of the city shall go into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city." So point one is that in the Old Testament, when it speaks of the gathering of all nations, it speaks of that gathering being specifically against Israel. In the New Testament, when it speaks of the gathering of all nations, it speaks of it in connection with the seven last plagues. Therefore, one of two things is true. Either there are two gatherings, or the gathering of the nation against Jerusalem is the gathering of the nations to the battle of Armageddon. We're going to continue to the seventh plague because the rest of our points are on plague seven. That was detailed in verses 17 to 21 of Revelation 16. And in verse 19, we find that that plague had three effects. The first effect is the city was divided into three parts. Now, this city was just joined in the sixth plague. Unclean spirits went out of the mouth of the combined beast, dragon, and false prophet. In the seventh, divide and conquer, the three are split apart. There is a division. The second effect of the seventh plague, the cities of the nations fell. There was a collapse, not necessarily of government, but of effectual domestic government. Government ceased to have the coalescing power it had had previously. And the third effect, and it's mentioned third, and Babylon came in remembrance for the purpose of giving to her the wine of the wrath of God, the cup of God's wrath. That symbol, the giving of the cup of God's wrath, mentioned here in connection with the final destruction of Babylon, is directly picked up from Jeremiah chapter 25. We'd like to turn now, if we will, to Jeremiah chapter 25. We want to read verse 15, and then we're going to skip down to later in the chapter. Jeremiah 25:15 says, "Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, take the wine cup of this fury at my hand, and cause all the nations to whom I send thee to drink it." Same symbology. Babylon is given the wine of the wrath of God. Jeremiah says, take the cup of my wrath and cause all nations to drink. Then he goes into a catalog of the nations. He lists several of them. So we'll skip down to the end of the listing to verse 26. After listing many individual nations, he says, and all the kings of the north, far and near, one with another, and all the kingdoms of the world. He is universal in his description in Jeremiah 25. All the kingdoms of the world which are upon the face of the earth, and the king of Shishak shall drink after them. Therefore thou shalt say unto him, thus saith the Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, drink ye, be drunken, and spew, and fall, and rise no more, because of the sword which I will send among you. And it shall be, if they refuse to take the cup of thine hand to drink, then thou shalt say to them, thus saith the Lord of hosts, you shall certainly drink. For lo, I begin to bring evil on the city which is called by my name, should you be utterly unpunished. You shall not be unpunished, for I will call for a sword upon all the inhabitants of the earth, saith the Lord. And now we'd like you to particularly note the next two verses. Verses 30 and 31. Therefore prophesy thou against them all these words, and say, the Lord shall roar from on high and utter his voice upon his holy habitation. He shall mightily roar upon his habitation. He shall give a shout, as they that tread the grapes, against all the inhabitants of the earth. A noise shall come even to the ends of the earth, for the Lord hath a controversy with the nations. He will plead with all flesh. He will give them that are wicked to the sword, saith the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, evil shall go forth from nation to nation, and a great wind, whirlwind, shall be raised up from the coast of the earth, and the slain of the Lord shall be that day from one end of earth even to the other. They shall not be lamented, neither gathered nor buried. They shall be dung upon the ground. In describing the effects of drinking the wine of God's wrath, he says several things will happen in verses 30 to 32. He says, at that time, Jehovah roars. At that time, there is a treading of the grapes. At that time, there is a controversy with the nation. At that time, there is a pleading with all flesh. At that time, there is a great whirlwind. And at that time, the slain of the Lord lay from one end of earth to the other end. Therefore, all of the events, 2 through 7, are directly connected with the fall of Babylon, its final and absolute collapse. That is immediately connected in the Jeremiah prophecy. The next part of our inquiry is to look at events 2 through 7 and notice where else these same events are mentioned. Notice the timing of the same events, number 2 through 7. When does Jehovah roar? Joel, the third chapter, verses 16 and 17. Joel 3, verses 16 and 17 reads, the Lord shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people, and the strength of the children of Israel. So shall you know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass through her any more. Joel, the third chapter, is a chapter that opens with the words, I will gather nations to plead for my people Israel. In pleading for Israel, he says, I will roar. So in Joel, the roaring of Jehovah is heard during God's battle for Israel, the result of which, that all of those dwelling in Jerusalem shall be holy. So it has to be the ultimate battle, not a prior battle. Therefore, the evidence of Jehovah's roaring is either he roars twice, or the fall of Christendom, Jeremiah 25, is identical time-wise with God fighting for Israel, Ezekiel 38-39, Joel 3. Next question. When does he tread the grapes in the winepress? Jeremiah 25, he says he treads them at the time of the fall of Babylon. That was part of the Jeremiah 25 scripture. Joel 3:13. Put you in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The fat overflow, for the wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. Joel 3, a prophecy of the final battle of Israel, has the treading of the winepress as part of its context. Jeremiah 25 links that treading of the winepress with the ultimate fall of Babylon, as does Revelation 14, 17 to 20, where the sickle was thrust in to reap the vine of the earth only after it is said, and the earth was reaped of the wheat. So after the church is complete, after the earth is reaped of the wheat, in Jacob's trouble, you have the treading of the winepress, which is also identified with the fall of Babylon. Either there are two winepresses, or you have two things describing different effects of the same battle. Jeremiah 25 says, at the time that God fights for Israel, he has a controversy with the nations. Isaiah 34 identifies this controversy with the nations in still another context. The context of Isaiah 34 is not a context that deals with Israel. It's a context that deals with the fall of Babylon. This is true. So we don't have the direct linkage that we do in the other verses. But we'd like to read verse 2 and then read verses 5 through 8. Isaiah 34:2. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. 5-8. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Edomia, and upon the people of my curse a judgment. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. I'm sure you're familiar with that treatment in volume 4 in this text. For the Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Edomia. And the unicorn shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls. And the land shall be soaked with blood, and their dust may be made fat with fatness. 4. It is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of the recompense for the controversy of Zion. The controversy of Zion is brought in connection in Isaiah with the fall of Christendom, as you would expect, because it's done the same in Jeremiah. But in Isaiah, when he brings it in, he says in verse 2, at the same time, the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations. It's the time when all the nations are gathered. Therefore, it fits into the gathering of the nations into the battle of Armageddon. Another feature of Jeremiah 25 that we looked at was that at the time of the fall of Babylon, he will plead with all flesh. Isaiah 66 tells us when he pleads with all flesh. Isaiah 66, 15 to 20, and we'll stop in our reading once or twice for brief comments as we go through this passage. Behold, the Lord will come with fire, and with his chariots like a whirlwind, to render his anger with fury, and his rebuke with flames of fire. You might just notice the chariots and the whirlwind here in connection with Elijah. We're not going to do any more, just give you a cross-reference. For by fire and by his sword will the Lord plead with all flesh. Here he talks about the pleading with all flesh. And the slain of the Lord shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the garden, behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh, and the abomination and the mouse, shall be consumed together, saith the Lord. For I know their works and their thoughts, and it shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues. And they shall come and see my glory. Identical phrase you have in Ezekiel 38 and 39, when he fights for Israel, and they see my glory. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape unto the nations, to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud that draw the bow, to Tubal and Javan, to the isles afar off that have not heard my fame, neither have seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. He mentions the same catalog of nations that are mentioned in Ezekiel 38. He talks about those who escape from this battle going back to the nations. He's saying that in the battle, when he fights for Israel, that there will be those who return, and as Brother Russell puts it, there will then be a larger exodus than the earlier exodus to Israel of the Jewish people. And he says it's at that time that he pleads with all flesh. Therefore, the pleading of all flesh is found both in connection with the fall of Babylon and God fighting for Israel. Jeremiah also tied in the whirlwind. He said at the time when he mows down Christendom, It would be through the instrumentality of a whirlwind, verse 32 of Jeremiah 25. But Isaiah 66 that we just read, in verse 15, connects the whirlwind, his chariots like the whirlwind, with the battle in which he shows his glory, and the battle in which Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, Tubal, and Jabal are part. So the whirlwind is connected both with God's battle for Israel and with the battle that is fought in which Christendom falls. Jeremiah 25 says the result of this battle would be that the slain of the Lord would lay from one end of the earth to the other. When do the slain of the Lord lay so prominently visible? Ezekiel 39, verses 11 to 14. Ezekiel 38 and 39, as I think we all know, is the great battle, climactic battle of Israel. And the aftermath of that battle, when God fought twice for them as he fought in the days of old, results in that it will come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers of the east of the sea, and I shall stop the noses of the passengers, and they shall bury Gog and all his multitude, and call it the valley of Haman Gog. 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying them, that they may cleanse the land. All the people of the land shall bury them. It shall be to them a renown the day that I will be glorified, saith the Lord God. And they shall sever men out of continual employment, passing through the land to bury the passengers with the passengers, those that remain upon the earth, to cleanse it after the ends of 7 months, so they search. And he goes through this great burial. The slain of the Lord from one end to the other is found in Jeremiah 25 with the fall of Christendom. It's found in Ezekiel 39 with God fighting for Israel. So each of our symbols from number 2 through 7 are found in two connections. The connection of the fall of Christendom, the connection of God fighting for Israel. Either they all happen twice, or the two happenings are simultaneous and concurrent. In the seventh plague of Revelation, the last part of the plague, Revelation 16:21, mentions an element that we did not particularly talk about when we detailed the plague earlier, because it's almost an aftermath element. After talking about the plague, he says, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague there was great. The seventh plague, the ultimate plague, the final collapse of Christendom, in its last phase, is accompanied by great hail. When does God use hail to fight? Ezekiel 38, 22. Ezekiel 38, again, is the armies of the north coming against Israel to battle. And it speaks of God fighting for them as before. And he says, and I will plead against the nations that come against him, with pestilence and with blood, and I will rain upon him and upon his bands and upon the people that are with him, and overflowing rain and great hailstones, fire and brimstone. Hail is the instrument of destruction in the battle when God fights for Israel. Hail is the instrument of destruction in the fall of Christendom. Either, again, we have a multiple use of the symbol, or we have a concurrence that shows that the two things happen simultaneously. Now we want to go to some other scriptures to find some concurrent evidence. Revelation 19 is a prophecy that is universally recognized as the battle against Christendom. It's the battle of the Lord against the forces of the adversary, the Lord's horses, host upon horses, the armies of heaven fighting with him, the sword going out of his mouth, and the result of which is the throwing of the beast and the false prophet into the bottomless pit. So we have the destruction, the putting away of Christendom. At the conclusion of that battle, after the victory, part of the mop-up operation described in the battle is given in Revelation 19, verses 17 to 19. I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, "Come, gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of kings, and the flesh of captains, and the flesh of mighty men, and the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on them, and the flesh of all men, both free and bond, both small and great." And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gather together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. So in that battle in which Christendom falls, there is what is called the Great Supper of God. All of the fowl are called to eat up the carrion, the vultures, to eat up the dead, as it were. It is a cleaning up operation that takes place, called an invitation to the fowls of heaven in order to consume that which is remaining. We find the same supper of God in the Old Testament. We find it in Ezekiel, the 39th chapter, verses 17 to 19. After God fights for Israel, in that battle when the armies of the north come against them, we read, "And thou, son of man, thus saith the Lord, speak unto every feathered fowl, to every beast of the field, assemble yourselves and come, gather yourselves in every side to my sacrifice that I do sacrifice for you." And the word literally here means slaughter. "Gather yourselves to the great slaughter that I will slaughter for you. Even a great slaughter upon the mountains of Israel, that you may eat flesh and drink blood. You shall eat the flesh of the mighty and drink the blood of the princes of the earth, of rams, of lambs, of goats, of bullocks, all of them fatlings of Bashan, and ye shall eat till ye be full, and drink blood till ye be drunken, of my slaughter, which I have slaughtered for you." Either we have two great slaughters, two great suppers of God, one following the destruction of Christendom, the other following God fighting for Israel, or more likely, there is one supper of God, and the two events happen concurrently and simultaneously. The shaking of the heavens, another symbol. Joel, the 3rd chapter, verse 16. This one we're going to treat very, very briefly. I'd like to call your attention before reading the verse to again the context. The context of Joel 3 is, "I've gathered all nations into the valley of Jehoshaphat. I've gathered them there to plead for my people Israel." So we have the setting very clear in Joel 3 that it's a time when God is fighting for Israel. And in verse 16, we read it earlier, "The Lord would roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake." If the heavens, ecclesiasticism, has already passed away, you can't shake it. You can't shake a non-existing element. The very fact that he shakes the heavens at the time when the nations are gathered for pleading for his people Israel implies that the heavens are there. You don't shake that which has already ceased from existence. So we would suggest that that implies the same thing. Perhaps the strongest indication is number 11. The role of Israel in the destruction of Christendom. And when we think of the destruction of Christendom, we often think of it from the standpoint of various forces that come together against Christendom. Various non-Christian forces, communism, pictured by Assyria, other elements. But in addition to all of that, the Bible outlines a very clear role that Israel has in the destruction of Christendom. Jeremiah 51, verses 20 to 24. Before we look at that, we want to notice Jeremiah 50, verse 1, the words of the Lord spake against Babylon. 51, verse 1, "I will raise up against Babylon." 50 and 51 are the prophecy of the destruction of Babylon. And in this prophecy, verses 20 to 24, starting in verse 19, we'll go back to verse 19. "The portion of Jacob is not like them," Babylon, "for he is the former of all things. Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. What does Israel do? What does it mean, is their rod? He says to Israel, you are my battle axe. You are my weapons of war. With thee will I break in peace the nations. With thee will I destroy kingdoms. With thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider. With thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider. The chariot and the rider. With thee will I break in pieces man and woman. With thee will I break in pieces old and young. With thee will I break in pieces the young man and the maid. I will also break in pieces with thee the shepherd and his flock. With thee will I break in pieces the husbandman and his yoke of oxen. With thee will I break in pieces captains and rulers. And I will render unto Babylon and all the inhabitants of Chaldea all their evil that they have done in Zion in your sight, saith the Lord. With thee. Always with thee. You notice the combinations he breaks up. Always combinations of things that naturally go together. The man and his wife. The yoke and the oxen. These are the things that are broken up. And you remember that song, from the 50s, about love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Well, that's what he's breaking. He's breaking these elements apart. In other words, he's taking that which has a natural affinity and turning it against itself. With thee am I creating, we'll get to it later, anarchy. But that's what he's saying. He's saying with thee, I will cause a chain reaction that becomes the destruction of Babylon. It's even clearer in the book of Obadiah. That's one of those hard to find ones. It's only a chapter long. It comes right after Amos. Amos comes after Hosea, after Joel, which comes after Hosea. Obadiah, verse 18. The house of Jacob shall be the fire. The house of Joseph, the flame, and the house of Esau, there's Christendom. The stubble. What is the relationship between fire and stubble? Fire burns stubble. That's the relationship. Jacob shall be the fire, Esau shall be the stubble. They shall kindle in them and devour them, for there shall not be any remaining of the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken it. Israel is listed as a major destroying factor in the consumption of the house of Esau and in Jeremiah with the fall of Babylon. Our final line is anarchy. In Zechariah, the 14th chapter, we have one of the most specific scriptures that tell us about anarchy being universal and reigning throughout the earth. Zechariah 14, verse 12, then this is a little bit incorrect here on the board. It's not 14, 12, and 13, 3. It's 14, verses 12, 13, and then verse 3. So let's go to Zechariah 14, verses 12 and 13 first. Zechariah 14, 12, and 13. This shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Here is how God fights. He said, this is my plague. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand upon their feet. Their eyes shall consume away in their holes. Their tongues shall consume away in their mouth. And it shall come to pass in that day that a tumult from the Lord shall be among them. And they shall lay hold every one in the hand of his neighbor. And his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. That's anarchy. Anarchy, he says, happens as the plague wherewith he fights for Israel. It is a result more than it is a cause of this battle. You notice in verse 3, the Lord would go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. He said, I'm going to use the same technique, the same methodology that I used back in olden times when I used to fight for Israel. One of those battles was the battle of Gideon versus Midian. John Trezine, I believe, talked about this at the beginning of this convention. We want to notice just one factor from that battle. It's in the book of Judges, chapter 7, verse 22. Remember how Gideon's men were coming down the hill, only 300 of them, with lamps and pitchers, and then simultaneously at a signal, all the pitchers broke, the lights shone out, the trumpet sounded, and if you were a poor Midianite, you got scared. And that's what it's saying. Judges 7, 22. Nope, that's not it. Oh, it is too. I got 622. And the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. And the host fled to Bethshitta of Zarephath, to the border of Abel-Meholah unto Taba. The Lord fought in the days of old, through causing anarchy in the enemy's camp. That's what Zechariah 14 says. When these armies come against Israel, I will set every man's hand against his neighbor. It is a tool of the Lord's destructive force. Ezekiel 38, the last battle. The time when the armies of Gog and Magog come against Israel. The time when God finally intervenes in that battle. In verse 21. And I will call for a sword against him through all my mountains, saith the Lord. Every man's sword shall be against his brother. Once again, he says that the time of every man's sword being against his brother is in this final battle. Now, that does not mean that there'll be no anarchy preceding. Anarchy is incipient. Anarchy is developing. Anarchy is a growing thing. There undoubtedly will be a much anarchy. But the great anarchy, the great crash, the final event, where it is truly reaches full stages, is as a result of the battle. We've gone rapidly. We went rapidly on intention. We wanted to give the maximum amount of time for questions. We realized that the subject matter, the conclusions drawn, may be provocative of questions. So we'd like to just summarize before our chairman comes forth for the singing of the hymn, so we can have some time for questions. But what we're suggesting is that by the 12 comparisons we listed on the board, we find 12 series of events that are listed in two different contexts in the New and Old Testament. All 12 of these things, the gathering of the nations, the roaring of Jehovah, the winepress, the controversy with the nations, the pleading with all flesh, the great whirlwind, the slaying of the Lord from one end to the other, the hail, the supper of God, the shaking of the heavens, the role of Israel in anarchy, indicate that the timing of the final collapse of Babylon really and fully comes at the time when God fights for Israel in this grand climax of the great battle between good and evil, between righteousness and unrighteousness that has been going on through the age.